You're listening to In the Vault, a KPMG banking industry podcast series.
Hi, everyone. Welcome to today's podcast. I'm Liz Lamadou, a principal in KPMG's banking and capital markets tax practice. And today I'm joined by two KPMG banking colleagues. Henry Lacey is a principal in our transaction strategy group, and Brian McDonald is a partner on our banking and capital markets tax team. So welcome, Henry and Brian.
Hi, Liz.
Hey, Liz.
I should say welcome back, because today we're going to continue a conversation. I chatted with both of you several weeks ago and got your thoughts on the deal market over the past few years in banking, mergers and acquisitions. We talked about some regulatory and valuation challenges and some outlook for the future. And so I'm excited to have you guys back. When we chatted before, we did discuss regulatory changes the banks were hoping to see this year with the new administration and what might start to loosen some of the activity in M&A. And now, since that recording, we have seen regulatory approval for the Capital One Discover merger, and that deal has closed. So does this mean that the regulatory gates are opening?
Yeah, thanks, Liz. So certainly in the last few weeks, we've seen a couple of significant changes. First one was the report that the US is preparedly reporting to cut back the capital requirements that the banks are required to hold. So some of this is under the Basel III rules and regulations and dates back to 2014 when the series of reforms were implemented as a result of the global financial crisis. So for banks that hold things like low risk assets like treasuries, this is good news. And, you know, generally for banks, it's good news overall that they'll be expected to hold less capital in the sort of medium term. Secondly, we've also seen some comment from the Consumer Financial Protection Bureau, the CFPB, that they're planning on rescinding 67 different policy and regulatory guidance documents going back over the last decade. We haven't seen the full list of these yet. But, you know, again, potentially for banks, that's a good news to speed up the overall flow of deals and deal in the marketplace. I guess a comment on the Capital One Discover merger. Clearly, you know, it took well over a year for approval, which isn't surprising given the change of administration and the fact that 24 was an election year. But, you know, I think for me as an observer of these things, the positive was that it was generally approved unencumbered, so there was no requirement on either party to exit various markets or products. And obviously now it's created a very large credit card provider in the US with its own payment network. So it really becomes a challenger then to the other more established payment networks.
Yeah, Henry, I thought it was also interesting, you know, just given the fact that it was a more of a niche type transaction, that, you know, ultimately we don't see large credit card deals or frankly that many credit card players to see, you know, a somewhat thin market consolidate in that fashion. And it seems, you know, I'll say bullish for future combinations in, I'll say, less niche spaces, like just in a normal commercial and community and regional banking space.
Henry, when we last spoke, you talked about three or four key regulatory items that you were hoping to see. And now you've just talked about lessening some of the capital requirements. Can you just refresh us on the others and what you're seeing towards those?
So there were four key things. So the first one was the capital requirements, as I said. The second were the revised bank merger guidelines that were implemented last summer, which we expect to be rescinded under the CFPB ruling of the 67 policy rescinds. Third one was the Community Reinvestment Act, and the fourth was market concentration limits. So, you know, I guess, you know, what I would observe, obviously, one and two, that, you know, there's been action on. In terms of point four around market concentration limits, I guess you could look at the Capital One Discover merger as an easing of that, because given the fact it's created a very large credit card issuer with its own payments network and also a network of car or vehicle lending that, you know, outstrips many other suppliers. So, you know, the regulators haven't taken a market concentration view in that respect. I think for the smaller regional banks and the Community Reinvestment Act will be one that they're watching acutely. And as I say, once we see the list of 67 policy rescinds, then it'll be interesting to see if any of the CRA is caught up in that.
Are there other market drivers that you're seeing that have changed in the last 5 months?
Certainly from my perspective, over the last couple of months, I think, you know, clearly, I think last time we spoke, tariffs were just being implemented or had just been implemented. You know, there's an element of maybe some of the adults taking back the room in the negotiations now, and a more straightforward, sensible approach being taken. You know, I think tariffs will be higher than they have been traditionally. I do not expect this administration to walk back from where they are, but you know, a more moderate approach potentially is in play now. I think what that means for the markets is that it gives the markets not necessarily full stability, but a greater sense of stability than we have seen previously. I would also add that, you know, it will then give the M&A market confidence in terms of how they you know, move towards undertaking M&A and what they look at. Certainly conversations I've been having recently with a number of clients is that they are very much thinking about the second half of this year, about what that means and, you know, what their growth agenda looks like as they look to, you know, grow their market share, grow their footprint, increase revenues, and also wrestle with new technologies around Gen AI and AI in terms of how they can use that and implement that to drive their overall market presence, market share, and, you know, profitability overall.
Yeah, I can see where the uncertainty of the tariffs and some of the upheaval can certainly play a role in this market like we've seen in others. Are the tariffs themselves, or was it just simply trying to get to the end of knowing where they might land that was the biggest hiccup?
With trying to be apolitical as somebody who doesn't have a vote in the US, then yeah, I think what markets look for is stability in policymaking. And I think, you know, at the beginning of April, when we saw the tariffs being introduced, there was a lot of knee-jerk back and forth in terms of, you know, it's at this level one day, at the next day it's at a different level. And I think banks and markets just find that very difficult to comprehend, you know, in what is a risk adverse environment. So I think as things begin to stabilize, I think it's important that the markets look at that and think about what that does, what that means for the way forward. But also, you know, I think secondly, that there's a bunch of activity that spawn out of the tariffs that may not impact banks on day one, but will certainly impact several of their clients, you know, or you know, sectors of their clients that are importers, exporters, or, you know, impacted in other ways through other decisions that the administration has taken through DOGE and things like that. So, you know, whilst the impacts may not be, you know, sort of apparent today, I suspect over the course of the next 6 months, you'll see various, you know, issues emerge with clients of banks and financial institutions as they wrestle with what the tariffs mean for them.
I think just stacking on, you know, I think we saw in Q1, certain lenders were focused on agriculture portfolios due to lessening of markets, tariff impacts, and the impact of not having as much US aid buying, ultimately benefiting farmers. And to Henry's point, I do think we'll continue to see small sectors of that play out over the coming year as the impact of tariffs are actually realized. But I think it's also worth noting that, you know, apart from tariffs, we do have a lot of other changes that are hitting kind of all at the same time. Tariffs, regulatory change, and then ultimately, and additionally, the impact of generative AI and what that might do to cost base. And so I think when I'm talking to my clients, it sounds like the weight of those three things are being balanced to ultimately drive the best outcome for the banks and the shareholders.
Well, and we'd be remiss if we didn't mention legislative uncertainty. At this point, we have seen a draft tax language out of the House. Brian, do you see that playing a role at all in the market's uncertainty?
I mean, it certainly is going to have an impact on market uncertainty. And I think the bigger impact will just be on borrower base. But while banks may benefit, and you know, obviously we're continuing to see changes made to those draft bills, And while certain, you know, while certain segments of the banking community will benefit, one of the areas being in agricultural lending, where there's currently some provisions that would be beneficial there, I do think that the overall impact to, you know, the bank's core tax positions really aren't going to be significantly impacted.
When we spoke last time, we spent a little bit of time on valuations over the past few years. Henry, have you seen any changes in that? And has this very recent more stability or less uncertainty in the market had any impact?
So, I mean, we continue to see high multiples in, you know, people looking to acquire wealth and asset management type businesses. You know, they are very, very popular at the moment as, you know, financial institutions strive to push into that high net worth, you know, very high, ultra high net worth market, and drive, you know, the share of wallet in that respect. I think we haven't seen, you know, we've seen some small deals around the regional banking market space, and multiples have been broadly in line. I think as we see, you know, potentially a fall in interest rates, some market stability, then, you know, it will become easier to value what's in front of you. And I think the next 2, 3, 4, 5 deals will give you a view in terms of which way multiples are going. You know, personally, as a, you know, as somebody who sort of observes this market, I suspect they'll tick up slightly, but, you know, I don't think they'll reach the heights of the asset management wealth type multiples that we've seen.
And are you hearing bankers talking about this? And if so, are they saying anything in particular related to deals?
I think the general expectation is that, you know, with a receding regulatory environment, the bankers are very much positive about what we are going to see in the marketplace over the next 6, 12, 18 months. I think, you know, when you split the marketplace, it probably into three parts for the banking. So obviously you've got the top of the house G-SIFIs, and then you've got the super regionals, and then you've got the banks underneath that. So, you know, personally, I don't expect any great level of, you know, super bank mergers. You know, I just don't think it would get through the regulators. I think the super regionals, you know, are striving to get into that top 6, top 8 banks in the US. So, you know, Will we see a merger or activity in that market? I suspect we will. And I think first mover advantage will be key in that space. And then, you know, many of the bankers are saying that, you know, at that next level down, which is about 100-130 banks, then I think one banker described that as where the war is going to be over the next 3 or 4 years in terms of, you know, between 100 billion and 300 billion in terms of scale, merging up to north of 500, north of 700, so that you can really become one of the super regionals over that period of time. I think the other thing the banks are saying is looking at alternative ways to market. So things like industrial loan companies, et cetera. So, you know, where can players take advantage of an ILC to enter the market and, you know, drive potentially a niche product offering that they wouldn't be able to do under normal circumstances.
So, Brian, as I think about the market, there's the three segments or tranches that Henry just delineated, but I think really a fourth if we go down to the true community bank size. So any expectations in that space for the remainder of the year?
Yeah, so I think that it'll be interesting to see what happens and you know, over the next 18 to 24 months as well, is just whether valuations start to align between buyers and sellers in the community and regional banking space, and whether the adoption or rapid adoption of any technological advancements drives those community and regional banks to do more of the, call them, mergers of equals or technological synergy type transactions to work together to harness some of these technologies in ways that eliminates cost and creates the synergies that were promised in the last round of MOEs. And so I think that'll be, you know, a really interesting theme. And I think we're starting to see it play out in other sectors of the economy where AI is starting to be used to reduce workforce and reduce redundancy. And it'll just be interesting to see how the banks work together to team and harness synergies of cost as they embrace those challenges.
Yeah, that's a great point. I mean, I think we always talk about cost synergies and utilizing technology for those efficiencies post-merger, but it does feel like with AI, we're at a tipping point and certain things are going to become necessity, absolutely moving forward for banks to continue to be competitive. So there's a lot swirling around to take into play over the next 18 months.
I would add to that list, Liz. I think, you know, historically, banks have always been very focused on cost synergies, cost saves during mergers and acquisitions. I think, you know, some of that, it doesn't necessarily become easier with AI, but, you know, there's maybe a solution in AI that is quicker to implement. I think the driver and where the markets will be looking for is probably, you know, where is the value add in terms of revenue, new markets, expanded markets, expanded product sets, et cetera, going forward. You know, and I think it will no longer be enough just to put, you know, A plus B together and you get C, and C saves X percent of the overall cost base. I think, you know, A plus B has to equal, you know, an upside for the clients and an upside for the shareholders as well in terms of revenue.
Well said. Well, I am actually looking forward to having you guys back a third time towards the end of the year, and we can talk about what's happened and how your expectations played out.
Thanks, Liz.
Thank you, Liz.
So thank you both, Brian and Henry, for talking us through this topic today. And to our audience, thank you for joining today. This is Liz Lamadou on behalf of KPMG's Banking and Capital Markets Tax Practice. I look forward to talking again soon.
Thanks for listening to In the Vault with KPMG. Be sure to subscribe to this series to be notified of new episodes.